Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to be with you on this Thursday. Joe Susan joins us on the show today, our high school football roundtable today. Jerry DiPolo from the Pittsburgh Tribune final half hour to discuss Pitt. He covers them. Well, great to have you with us on the show today. And looking forward to talking with all of you about what is going on with the big game coming up on Saturday. We've talked about the preparation part of it. I think what's interesting is I understand if, obviously, people not being there. So I understand that part completely. So for someone like me who is there, I'm able to fill in blanks as to what's going on. So I can fill in blanks for you as to, you know, what he's talking about. And part of it is the emotion that everyone talks about with this game. There was a major, as I mentioned at the beginning of the week, a storyline on last year going in was that Pitt got the rivalry and Penn State didn't, because of the way Pat Narduzzi talked, the emotion of it, so forth. And it couldn't have been further from the truth. But there's also something else. Penn State's playing for big stakes every week. Every week, Penn State plays for big stakes. And when you're playing for big stakes every week, you need to have an approach that matches the fact that you are playing for big stakes every week. You have to. And that's the approach that they take. But the way Penn State practices, they practice with pace. There is a constant motion in practice. There is very little standing around in a practice. And there's also a motion in practice. Somebody makes a mistake, it is absolutely pointed out in no uncertain terms. But if somebody does something really well, it is also pointed out in no uncertain terms. And you'll see, say, for example, a guy makes a great catch, or a guy gets an interception, makes a play. And they'll be chest bumping, high fives, and in the few seconds of that, boom, and then back to work. That's the emotion that you have in a practice. It is there every week. And I think that that when someone like James Franklin talks about, well, we take the same approach every week, they do take the same approach every week. So now I'll personalize it for you. In my job, announcing Penn State football every week, I take the same approach every week, because it's an approach that works for me and makes sure that I'm ready to do the job on Saturday. So every Sunday morning, starting at 7:30, I take the box score from the previous day, and I get to work on my analytics that I put on a chart. All right. So every Sunday morning, and I do this, it doesn't matter where it's Akron, Georgia State, Pitt, Ohio State, Big Ten Championship game, Rose Bowl. I do the same thing and same approach every time. So what are the analytics that I do that I sit down and I put together on a chart? This is what I did Sunday morning, and when I get ready for Georgia State, this will be the exact same thing I will do this upcoming Sunday morning on the 10th. So I get to a chart, and I'll at least let you know what I have on here. 70-yard drives, what's the longest drive? 50-yard drives, what were the results of those drives? How many drives has Penn State had scoring drives of under 4 minutes? Okay. How many points do they average per game? Rushing per game, giving up rushing per game, passing per game, giving up passing. Total offense, what do they give up? What's the turnovers for? So are they a plus, a minus? How many points off of takeaways? What's Penn State's third down percentage? I'll go in depth on that in a moment. What's the third down percentage by the opponent? What about fourth down? How many sacks does Penn State have this year? Penalties per game, yardage on penalties per game. What's the red zone efficiency? How many touchdowns? How many field goals? How many times do they turn the ball over? What's the opponent done against them? How many takeaways does Penn State have in the red zone? 50-yard line in, okay? 50-yard line in when you get the ball. Right? How many times has Penn State done it this season? So you go game by game. How many times have they scored a touchdown off of it? How many times did they have a field goal? Have they missed a field goal? Have they turned it over when they took it over on the plus side of the field? Have they punted on the plus side of the field? Opening drive efficiency in the first half, second half. Opposing team opening drive, first half, second half. Okay, first down, how many plays did Penn State run? How many yards did Penn State get on first down? How many yards per first down play did they get? How much of the offense is made up by first down? What was the breakdown between pass and run? Okay, defensive first down, how many plays against the defense? How many yards were gained against the Penn State defensive first down? And how much per play? Negative defense, how many plays were run against you and how many were thrown for a loss? What's the percentage? Third down in less than four, okay, for Penn State's offense. Third and less than four for Penn State's defense. How did they handle it? Third and five plus. How did Penn State do offensively? How did the opposing team do against Penn State's defense in that regard? These are all analytics on a Sunday morning that I do every single time. Then I update who's the last rusher to get 100 yards, last 200, 300-yard passing game, 100-yard receiving, 50-yard field goal, and any other notes that come into play. Then I get to the individual players and update all of their stats on my chart. And then I go to the opposing team, I do their analytics, and then I go to the chart. Right? That's how I get ready for a game. I do not change my approach. Then on Monday... usually on Sunday I'll take a look at selective parts of the opponent's previous game. So I'll watch some video, usually on Sunday, and then a lot on Monday morning to kind of get a feel for what I'm looking at so that when I look at a practice, I've got a better feel personnel-wise as to who those people are and what they do defensively and offensively. So I'll look at video Sunday, and I'll look at it a lot more on Monday morning after my class is over with. And then I go through, you know, through a website, a series of analytics on the opponent. But then it's a question of going to practice, watching practice, get some repetition in my head as to what I'm seeing, why I'm seeing it, how they're approaching it. And then I get to the game. My point about talking what I do is that I take the same approach every week, regardless of the opponent, so that when I'm ready, when the game is ready to go on Saturday, I, as the broadcaster, am ready to go as well. I may only use 2 or 3% of everything I prepared, but the 2 or 3% changes every week. So when people talk about, you know, they've got to understand the emotion of this game and so forth. Look, they get it. They understand that part. But every game brings with it an emotion. And if you take the same consistent approach, it puts you in a position to be as ready as possible. They prepared last year exactly the same way for Ohio State as they did for Pitt. They prepared exactly the same way for Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship game as they did for Pitt. It just turned out that they were able to beat Ohio State, and they were able to beat Wisconsin. Now, it also helped that in the Ohio State and the Wisconsin games, Penn State had Grant Haley, had Jason Kabinda, had Brandon Bell, had Evan Schwann, and had Garrett Sickles. All those players missed the Pitt game last year. All of them missed the Pitt game last year. And they also had Saeed Blacknall for Ohio State and Wisconsin. They did not have Saeed Blacknall for the Pitt game last year. Yeah. Personnel makes a difference. And it wasn't emotion that made the difference in last year's game. It was Penn State's depleted personnel that made a difference. And also Pitt, to its credit, got off to a great start, got out of the gate, and got it going. And, of course, for Penn State, getting out of the gate is something we talked a lot about last year with that team and their ability to be a really good second-half team. And in that game, Penn State was a really good second-half team. But Penn State, after they beat Minnesota, found a level of confidence that made a big difference in the season. They will enter this game with the confidence of being a defending Big Ten champion and playing at home. And they're going to take the same approach in practice as they always take, because guess what? It has been proven that the approach works. I saw it work against Michigan State, Ohio State, Indiana, Wisconsin, over and over again. Did it work out so well for Pitt? No, but people forget how depleted Penn State was going into the game last year at Heinz Field. And they also had not achieved in the second game under Joe Moorhead's system, in the second game under Brent Pry's system, they hadn't achieved that rhythm yet that they eventually did start achieving, starting with Minnesota. Exactly the kind of rhythm that James Franklin's trying to coach, the kind of pace he's trying to coach. So I know it's an easy, convenient story to talk about, quote, they get it. We don't think Penn State got it last year. That's a nice, easy, convenient story, but it's not quite how things are operated. And I talked about, again, how I prepare. Just because it's Pitt, I didn't change a single thing as to what I did to get ready for the game. Because in what my business and in what I do, for me, that's the formula that works and I think gives me the best chance of success. Now, you can sit there and, as a listener, and dispute whether I've had any success, but at least internally, for the moment, I'll feel good about myself and feel like it's my best chance for success. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I think one of the primary points I'm trying to make with, when I might as well personalize it and talk about my preparation for a game, is that when I sit down on Sunday morning to get ready for Georgia State, I will do exactly the same order of preparation that I use to get ready for Pitt. Because even though almost everyone will sit there and go, it's only Georgia State. It's only, while this week everybody's going, it's Pitt. It's Pitt. I understand that. As a fan, this is a big, big deal to you. Next week, you'll be like, Georgia State. Completely understand that. You know, as a fan, you can absolutely afford to do that. As someone who's working in the confines of the game, I can't, because I'm expected to go on the air at 2 o'clock on Saturday and know, to the best of my ability, everything I'm talking about. I'm expected at 3:30, to the best of my ability, to not only know as much about Penn State, but to know as much about Pitt as I can. Well, next week, when they play Georgia State, while many of you will be going, it's just Georgia State, it's not Pitt, I still have to go on at 6 o'clock and know as much about Penn State as I can, and know as much about Georgia State as I can, because for several hours I'm going to be on describing Penn State and Georgia State and talking about their respective personnel and their respective teams. Well, a coach has to do the same thing. Coach has to sit there and say, okay, we got to get back to work. We got to keep going here. And to throw all the eggs into a basket and then, you know, the next week, yeah, we're fine. Yeah, that's not how it works. You don't get that many opportunities to do this For a player, they may get 52, 53, 54 opportunities in their entire lives to play a college football game. Well, it's the responsibility of the coach to make sure that each and every one of them, they coach it up and get it done. I mean, that's their job. And same thing with what I do. I get X amount of opportunities a year. I get 50 opportunities for baseball a year. I get, with the blue-white game or whatever, 14, 15 football opportunities a year. I'll get between 30 and 35 or 36 basketball opportunities a year. Well, each time you're expected to go out and you're expected to be good at it. Now, you may not think I'm good at it, but I'm expected to be good at it. And I'm not expected to take a day off when I do it. I'm not expected to take any time off when I do it. So, in other words, if I were to, it's only Georgia State next week, nobody's going to care, and I take a lackadaisical approach, what I've just done is I have ripped off the listener completely. You don't deserve that. And as a fan of the team, you don't deserve to have your team take the same approach either. So by taking the same approach where each one is a singular entity every week, where you've got to put everything you can into winning that game regardless of who's in front of you, you as the fan deserve that kind of effort. Your coaching staff at Penn State gives you that kind of effort. And it has nothing to do with jumping up and down and bulletin board material and things like that. It has to do with being efficient, knowing the game plan, and getting the job done, because they already have a lot of emotion built into their practice to begin with. So there's a lot. They are not a stoic state staff on the practice field. Great job on play 9. Let's go to play 10 on the card. Terrific. All right. Nice job. Everybody, play 11. No, they go out there. You do a great job on play 10. Everybody in that practice field is going to know you just did a great job on play 10. You do it wrong, everybody in the practice field is going to know you didn't do it right. All right. Hey, reload. Get back up there. Let's go. Let's do it again. That's not right. All right. Then you do it right. Great job. Great. You know, somebody makes a great catch. There's a high five. There's a chest bump. Something that happens on that field. There's emotion built into these practices. And it's more than just, oh, it's the rivalry of all rivalries. And the other part I want to get to is this. I was talking with an assistant coach today in another sport who's been here for 6 years now. And he said, as I was there, I had to do an interview with somebody else in the building today for the football TV show. And this assistant coach, and I'm not going to name who it was, said, explain to me, what's the big deal of this game? Because he's not from here originally. He says, I mean, isn't Ohio State, Michigan State, aren't those the bigger games, the Big Ten games? I thought it was just an interesting perspective from someone who did not grow up here. And now has watched Penn State, which is about to go into his 25th Big Ten season, how they're ingrained in the Big Ten culture now.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. I just heard that promo about... They're going to talk about monuments, and it reminds me of the Colin Cowherd line from last week
when Robert Lee was moved from the Virginia game to the Youngstown State Pitt game because of his name. And Coward told his audience, he said, ESPN's really lucky there was not a Confederate general named Herb Street. All right, let's get to Joe Susan as Bucknell gets ready for Holy Cross at Christie coming up Saturday at noon, coming off a win over Marist 45-6 on Saturday. Coach, welcome back. It is always our pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. I know that you probably didn't have a long weekend, and neither did we. Actually, it wound up being a little bit quicker than normal because we go from a 6 o'clock start on Saturday to a 12 noon start this Saturday. And if I had my way, I'd have them all at noon, though. You get going. You don't have to wait through the early part of the day, but it's the nature of college football. And our players adapt better than our coaches. This coach particularly.
Yeah, that's usually the case across the board. It's amazing how they adapt. In the context of an opening game, because this performance you want much better a month from now, much better a month after that. In the context of an opening game, did they handle it the way you hoped they would?
They did. They approached the work week the way we anticipated they would because of the maturity of this team. They didn't get too emotional before in pregame. Said sometimes you can leave parts of you out on the field in pregame. And they were opportunistic early in the game, and it led to, when you look at the scoreboard, 28-0 at the end of the first quarter. One of the challenges there is that you have 45 minutes left of football, and anything can happen in 45 minutes. A lot of things normally do. And I thought that they handled from that point on very well. And one of the things that impressed me is that our young offensive line only really gave up one sack. But one of the things that we vary the snap counts because a lot of what we do is at the line of scrimmage. We didn't have any offensive penalties, and that's in itself in the first game. You anticipate a couple of those things, and they did a good job with that. We did have some defensive penalties offsides. They try to cheat the snap count, and every defensive player in the world is going to try and do that. And we'll work to fix that going into this week.
What were your thoughts on how Mark Mew managed the offense and how he did things in a certain way that a coach likes?
It's Matt Mew, and unless his middle name's Mark. But
oh, did I say Mark? I thought I said Matt. I'm sorry.
Well, you could have called him Sean. But
that's true. He is a twin.
Or Kevin. I don't think Kevin would be behind the center, though. He might be the center. But Matt really did a good job, managed the game well, made the right choices in terms of changing the protections, which he had to do. It was really what Marist's intent was what we expected. They were going to bring a lot of pressure from all levels, not just the linebacker level, from the secondary level as well. And he was smart with the football. The one turnover we had, it was a catch hit that jarred the ball loose. The ball was on our tight end and jarred the ball loose, and usually the deflected balls are intercepted, and that's what that was what led to the only turnover we had. But he was 16 for 24, and we actually had, really, when we count him, we had three drops, so it could have been a lot better. But he is a very composed young man, and just in terms of football IQ, really has outstanding football IQ, and that'll pay dividends as we move into this next week, which is a league game. But I'm convinced them that it's just the next first game, and they have approached it that way, and they've done a good job so far this week.
When you control the line of scrimmage, you control so much of the game. What kind of job did your defensive front do in controlling the game?
You know, we felt that from a movement standpoint, it would provide us with an athletic advantage over the, you know, Marist's offensive line is big, and so will Holy Cross's be. But our front four is so athletic, and that's what really pleased us in terms of really putting them in a situation where they could not run the ball effectively, and then they had to throw the ball. And when they did throw the ball, we were fortunate to get a number of hits on their quarterback. And once you get into that guy's head about he's going to be hit, and some of the hits he took were kind of rough, it really impacts his ability to function as he's a pretty good quarterback. And Mike White is, you know, I think he's going to win a lot of games for them, but we hit him hard, we hit him off, and that really impacts quarterback in terms of what he thinks is timing. He rushes things, and some of the communication that he had with his receivers led to our first touchdown pass, where I think he had signaled a double move to the outside receiver, and the outside receiver was actually blocking our defenders. So the ball was thrown to one guy. It was our corner, Colin Johnoff, and he converted it into a 64-yard touchdown. So if you can get in a quarterback's head and keep them in third and unmanageable, it really does a great job. And a big part of that is our ability to control that part of the offensive line. Our Matt Borsch, our defensive coordinator, defensive line calls it, coach calls it Dent. And when we're playing the game on their side of the line of scrimmage, it's a good thing.
Really good thing. And there are certain core values that are very important to you within your program. Several players embody those core values. Would it be safe to say that Mark Pyles is one of them?
Certainly is. Doesn't say much. He does make the right calls. He actually has to talk when he's making calls. But Mark, you know, his statistics, he led us in tackling. He had 8 tackles, 2 for loss. He had a massive tackle on. He's on our kickoff team, and you know that goes with being selfless. But he made a tackle on the kickoff team that we always give out hit of the week. We had 3 to choose from. It's good that you have more than one to choose from. Marks was one of them, but his running mate Ben Richard got the other one, where he ran through the quarterback. Mark does an outstanding job. He's on our punt team, he's on our kickoff team, and selfless, which is what I consider probably our most important goal, but also mentally tough. And it's amazing how quickly 4 years go, because when I look at these guys, I remember them as freshmen. I think it goes faster for me than it does for them, but
Yeah.
You having a young man like that on your field, representing your team, representing your university, it's a privilege to coach those kind of guys.
You didn't have to punt often, but when you did, you got 3 knocked down inside the 20, and you got 2 50-plus punts. What does that do for a coach and your mindset when now you have the ability to change field position?
The thing it did for us, obviously, it gave us a short field, gave them a long field. When the field's tilted, it's to your advantage just in terms of percentages. But Alex Pietschen is a weapon. And the thing that it does when you're in that gray area of whether you want to try a long field goal or try to pin them down, he's worked on his art, his craft of he actually changed the angle with which he punts the ball, and his spins are outstanding. So there will be times where you know you're running it through your mind: do I try to get some points on the board, or do I pin them? And because of the way we play defense, more often than not, unless we need those points, we're going to go with the we're going to pin them in, and then play defense from there and force them to punt out of their end zone. And it happened on. I believe it was their first or one of their possessions where we actually had a sack fumble in the end zone converted to a touchdown. He's just so confident with his ability, and I've said it before here, he's a great athlete. Quarterback in high school, pitcher, center fielder, point guard. I asked him when he batted, and I said, you probably batted 9th. He goes, no, I batted first. And I told him, well, 9th is if second leadoff hitter, and he kind of looked at me funny, but great young man. Also like a 3.96 GPA here in one of the more demanding curriculum. So outstanding. It's good to have him, and we're going to have him for a while, which is good.
That's really good. Joe, you've got Holy Cross coming in, and you talked about how it's a noon game, so it's a little shorter. Holy Cross opened up on Thursday night, the 31st, when they played UConn, and they gave UConn all they could handle over at the Rent in East Hartford before UConn finally edged them out. So they've got some extra time. What are your thoughts on Holy Cross?
I think that Tom Gilmore does an outstanding job. Their defense is very aggressive. Their strength of their defense is their front six and their movement. What that does is helps their secondary. Their offense runs through their quarterback, Peter Pujols, and he's one of the better young men that we will see in this league at any, you know, and any of the leagues we play against. He is a guy that is smart with the football, does not make mistakes with the football, and he's a combination magician and a surgeon at the same time. They're an option offense, but their options are vertical. They're run-pass options. He does that as well as anybody I've been around. He makes time for himself, and he can throw the balls that he can throw the field out. He can throw the field whole route in cover two that you don't even see tried much at this level or any level.
That's right.
And especially from the high school or the college hash, a little bit wider than the pro hash. But our ability to impact him is going to be critical. And he's a guy that really makes a lot of adjustments to the line of scrimmage. We're going to try and cross him up in terms of pre-snap to post-snap defense. Having those extra days in terms of prep, I think, is important to a coaching staff. But having those extra days in terms of rehab is important to a coaching staff. And, you know, that UConn-Holy Cross game was a physical game. Those extra couple days, I'm sure, helped Tom Gilmore in terms of having his team healthy and ready. And you have the days you have. So we were smart about what we did this week and excited to get on the field. We're on the field today's review and goal line and short yardage. And our kids are – the thing that we can't let them do is – get too ready too fast, and right. I think they're mature enough to understand that, and they've done that.
Well, I'm going to let you get back to work. I just appreciate the time you gave us. It's going to be noon on Saturday at Christie. Looking forward to it very much. Best of luck on Saturday. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sean. You guys have a great day.
You too, Coach.
Thanks. Bye.
Joe Susan, head football coach at Bucknell. They have Holy Cross, the Crusaders, coming in Saturday at noon on Eagle 107, the airtime with the gang will start at 11:30. Looking forward to that very, very much. Doug and Kevin will have the call for you on Eagle 107. Kevin will be there, right? He didn't take a vacation day, did he?
No, he did not, but it was funny because Joe mentioned Kevin at the top of your chat with him, and he barges into the studio and says, hey, I know this mid-40s out-of-shape quarterback with 4 years of eligibility. I was going to mention that to Joe before he hung up, but and we know what the answer is going to be. I don't think you need to add depth to that quarterback position.
I always feel it's really unnecessary to depress the passengers. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. First of all, kudos to the young man for making the field goal. That was the highlight. Okay. I'm not going to get into that. Saturday's game is a 3:30 start. We're on beginning at 2 o'clock with the pregame show. Looking forward to it. There is we're going to be, for those of you who attend the pregame show, we're going to be down a little bit from where we usually are, just maybe a little bit closer to Gate B, because they put a band on our stage. So we'll be down a little bit. But, yeah, the weather's going to be nice, so I'm sure you'll find us. All right. Don't shake your head. That's a fact. They put a band on the stage.
Okay.
Okay. Well, the Urban Meyer made a statement today, which I completely agree with. And And the he was talking about Tom Herman, and Tom Herman essentially saying after they lost to Maryland, like, hey, look, we can't just wave a magic wand and put pixie dust on this group and blah, 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 you know. Here's the bottom line, and Urban Meyer's right about this. When you agree to take over a program, it is your choice. It's your choice to become their coach. And he is absolutely right about that. It is your choice to become their coach. So once you become the coach, they are your players. And you have to have your players' backs. Because now they're your players. And Urban Meyer's right about that. You know, you walk in. Now, there's certain situations. Let's take, for example, whomever takes over at Ole Miss. You know, whomever takes over at Ole Miss is inheriting a mess down there in terms of the program. But when that person, whomever that is, walks in to be the head coach, every person in that room becomes his player. Every one of them does. And it's up to them to do what they can to forge a relationship with that player. And to do whatever they can to get the best out of that player. And along the way, as you recruit and you try to recruit to a style you like to play and you try to recruit to the type of athlete that you feel you need in your program to be successful, well, that happens over time. But don't walk in there and look around the room and think, well, I got a mess here. Those are now your players. It's Tom Herman's job to have the backs of his players. And then in private on a practice field saying, hey, look, you got to do this better. You've got to do that better. You got to do this better. You got to do that better. And you need to come up with ways to fix things. But you do that behind closed doors. You don't sit there and talk about, hey, I can't wave a magic wand, pixie dust, and here we go. You can't say that stuff. And Urban Meyer's right. It's your job to look in and go into that auditorium and look around that auditorium and say, you know what? Hey, I'm your coach. You're my players. I'm proud to coach you. And hopefully you'll be proud to play for me as your coach. When you walk in, those are your players. And that's, yeah, that to me is, yeah, I think Urban Meyer is absolutely right about that. It's your job to make it happen. And some coaches go in. I'll tell you what I thought was one of the guys that always kind of bothered me a little bit in terms of the insecurity of a coach was in the early years. It's not like that anymore. But Brett Bielema in the early years of Wisconsin, any time that they did something right, he would talk about how, you know, we coached them up the right way. We did it like, hey, look, you don't have to keep telling us that you did it. Team does it. Players do it. And did you do a good job of coaching it? Well, I can see the result. You must have done a very good job. You won the game. You don't have to keep telling me you coached it up. Now, he doesn't do that anymore. And that was just a young coach, first head coaching job and so forth for a couple of years. He was like that. And then as time went and he achieved his own personal level of success as a coach, he completely changed his tune about that. And I give him a lot of credit for that. I also think that some people said he's on the hot seat. I think one of the worst things I see in the SEC right now is everybody keeps changing coaches all the time, trying to keep up with Saban, and every time they do, they fall further behind.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.